Ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the other podcast. I'm your host, Robert Stacy McCain.
And I'm not. Hey, folks, it's the other guy on the other podcast, John Hogue, sitting across the dining room table at an undisclosed location from Stacy, who blogs at theothermccain.com.
And you can find my good friend John Hogue's blogging regularly at Hoguewash.com.
Yes, and you can find the astute comments, usually at the McCain, but occasionally at Hoguewash, from our friend Diana. How you doing down there in Georgia?
I have sworn off all despair, but otherwise, freezing, leaden skies really goes with my mood. How are you guys? Yeah.
What's the weather? It's cold down there in Valdosta.
It is. It's cold enough that when I actually mentioned that I was a bit chilled, nobody turned and said, "Shut up, California girl," which was what they said last winter.
So. Okay.
Yeah, well, some of the coldest nights I've ever spent were actually in Brownsville, Texas, which is almost tropical. I mean, it's down on the mouth of the Rio Grande. But when it's 34 degrees in Brownsville, I mean, they literally have people dying in the streets.
Yeah, when it's cold in Valdosta down there near the Florida line. So it's not usually cold down there with the live oaks, with the Spanish moss.
Yeah. Yeah, we are getting so much Spanish moss drop. It's kind of weird. Every day we have to go out and pick it up and move it to the foliage removal site.
Oh, it's the really burdens amazing. Of life. Your life is so hard.
It could be worse.
Picking up Spanish moss. When she was in San Francisco, she was having to dodge dog poop and hypodermic needles on the streets.
Well, it wasn't
I don't think they have any of that down in human poop, actually.
Yeah, dogs.
Well, it could be worse. She could be in Philadelphia.
And by the way, folks, before we get to Philadelphia, and I know you're just eager to get to Philadelphia.
On the other hand, no.
Yeah. Really. We're going to get to the most obvious news of the recent week.
Through the program.
Yeah. We're going to get there. But before we do, I would like to talk about our good friend Kathy Scheidel, who apparently passed away.
Yes,
today.
At least she found a way to avoid Philadelphia.
Yes. If you've seen, I haven't had a chance to blog about it. I blogged about her bout with cancer a couple of weeks ago, but she wrote her own obituary at 5feetoffury.com.
And it should be read.
Yeah. And she was 5 years younger than me. So you know, that this is one of the things when people younger than me keep dying, it reminds me that I am not
Stacy,
immortal.
Take a number.
Yeah. Well, anyways, her obit reads, "Following a tedious rendezvous with ovarian cancer, Kathy Scheidel has died, wishing she'd spent more time at the office." Her tombstone reads, "Get off my lawn." She is relieved she won't have to update her LinkedIn profile, shave her legs, or hear "Creep" by radio ever again. Mm. Some may even be jealous that she's getting out of enduring a Biden presidency. Kathy Scheidel was one of the first people who linked my blog back when I first started out in the world of blogging. And she just had a tremendously feisty attitude. She was literally, she is literally 5 feet tall. When you say 5 feet of fury, that's...
I'm not sure. I think she was more like 4'10".
Yeah. She was very short. I first met her at CPAC, and I want to say it was 2008 or 2009 because it was before... It was while they were still having it I just went blank. It was the hotel the Beatles stayed at when they came to D.C. the first time. No. It wasn't the Omni Shoreham. It was the Omni Shoreham. So it was down in the catacombs of the Omni Shoreham. So when they were still having it there. And I met her and she was, you have to understand Canada, where unfortunately she lived, but unfortunately she lived in Canada, fortunate she lived, but Canada had this awful human rights commission. They had these human rights commissions up there, and somehow she got hauled before the tribunal for thought crime, suggesting, among other things, that maybe all Muslims were not peaceful. And this was back during the era of the war on terror and 9/11 and all that. And she was she wrote at a lot of different places over the years, including Talkie's magazine, which is where all the good thought criminals congregate.
But, you know, one of the things about her, you talk about her as a thought criminal. She was one of the really sharp writers who in a period of roughly 15 to 10 years ago helped define the right side of the blogosphere.
Yeah, she was a pioneering blogger. Political blogging anyways really started with 9/11. The 9/11 attacks prompted a lot of people felt a need to speak out. And that was the rise of it. And so back in the day, as we had, it was wing nuts versus moon bats. Okay.
Yeah.
We were the wing nuts. They were the moon bats. And so,
yes, but I mean, and the thing was, there had been a few kind of blogs that were, but they were institutional nature, like, the corner at
the
NRO,
corner at NRO.
But then after 9/11, it just things blossomed with Instapundit and lots of others.
Yeah. And so most of us, or many of us, back in the day, cut our teeth basically defending the Bush administration against its enemies. That was the thing is, and there's no effing gratitude about that, by the way. Loyalty is apparently a one-way street with the neocons. You know, we defended the war on terror as it went downhill. And, it was my thing. And because in the lead up to the war on terror, the invasion of Mesopotamia, as I've often called the invasion and conquest of Mesopotamia, I was dubious as to the arguments being made publicly about why we were doing it. But I was working on the news side of the operation at the Washington Times, so I couldn't speak out about my doubts.
Well, that's another change in the last 20 odd years about whether the news speaks out or not.
Yeah. But everybody speaks out now. But anyways, but my attitude was, if you're in it, win it. Okay. I didn't get to choose that fight, but once we go to war, by God, we win.
Well, no, we haven't done that since 1945.
Well, that's what I'm saying is that I have this, I don't like losing. I believe it was George Patton said, "You show me a man who's a good loser, and I'll show you a loser."
Well, you know, but it's that same philosophy, though, on the world stage that has metastasized into state and local government. And as I was saying, at least she isn't in Philadelphia.
Yes. Well, we'll miss you, Kathy. And meanwhile, in Philadelphia, last weekend, I had a post about the awful crime situation in Mayor Lori Lightfoot's Chicago. And where the homicide rate increased 55% last year. Well, I was informed by my good friend Dana Pico that Philadelphia is actually worse than Chicago. And when you talk about crime, and to say that some place is worse than Chicago, I mean, you're scraping the bottom of the barrel. You're down in Baltimore territory, okay?
And well, they're not that far apart.
Baltimore, St. Louis, New Orleans.
Memphis.
Routinely, these are the easiest places to get killed in America. And so on a per capita basis, Philadelphia is actually worse. Under Democrat Mayor Jim Kenney, violent crime in Philadelphia, which was already worse than Chicago, increased more than 40% in 2020. More people were murdered in Philly last year than in all of 2013 and 2014 combined. The only time more people were slain in the city was 1990, when police reported 500 homicides as violence surged alongside, I'm sure you're going to be surprised, an intensifying crack cocaine epidemic.
Yes, but you know what happened right after that peak in 1990 that started driving things down?
What?
Pennsylvania became a shell issue state for concealed carry.
Yeah.
And there are all sorts of things like that. D.C., on the other hand, it took a Supreme Court case and a case all the way up to the Court of Appeals for it to become shell issue.
Even now it's not really.
No, but on the other hand, their mayor is so on top of things that she was absolutely certain she didn't need any support from the feds or the National Guard.
Yes,
for this week.
Before the Capitol riot, D.C. mayor rejected federal law enforcement assistance. The headline on an item at theothermccain.com. I'm really pushing that out there today. If you're wondering how a mob so easily overwhelmed security at the Capitol on Wednesday, look no further than D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser. On Tuesday, keep in mind, Mayor Bowser sent a remarkable letter, which I have linked in archive format just so they can't delete it, to Acting Attorney General Jeff Rosen and other officials, discouraging them from deploying security forces in the capital city. Let me quote from her letter. This is from Mayor Bowser. "As the law enforcement agency charged with protecting residents and visitors throughout the District of Columbia, the Metropolitan Police Department is prepared for this week's First Amendment activities. The District of Columbia government has not requested personnel from any other federal law enforcement agencies. To avoid confusion, We ask that any request for additional assistance be coordinated using the same process and procedures. To be clear, the District of Columbia is not requesting other federal law enforcement personnel and discourages any additional deployment without immediate notification, blah, blah, blah. And she talks about the Metropolitan Police Department is well-trained and prepared to lead the law enforcement coordination and response to allow for the peaceful demonstration of First Amendment rights in the District of Columbia, end quote.
That aged well, didn't it?
200,000 people showing up? I'm sorry, but there's bound to be a few nutters involved. 200,000 people is an awful lot of people.
But most of them were most of them were in areas where there was essentially federal primary jurisdiction, like the mall, which is under the jurisdiction of the Park Police, and the Capitol, which is under the jurisdiction of the Capitol Police, and the Hill. The next
Capitol day. Hill.
Yeah, but the Hill, the magazine / website, the Hill reported the next day after on Thursday, Capitol Police face heat following mob breach was the was their headline.
And at least one entrance, they actually let people in, at least at one entrance.
Well, but you know, you had a bunch of well-behaved people probably coming in.
They were not well-behaved. Well, Some of them were shouting effing traitors.
Well, that's true. But I mean, compared to some of the kinds of demonstrations that have been going on in the last year, it didn't appear to be quite what it spiraled into. But anyway, Leon Panetta, was former defense secretary and Democrat, was quoted saying, "What the hell was law enforcement thinking?" Right? A recently elected Democrat from Missouri, Representative Cori Bush, basically was asked by an interviewer on MSNBC if the Capitol Police made her feel safe. And she said, "Well, I did until today." but this whole defunding the police thing has become somewhat less popular among people on the left.
Yes, rather suddenly.
Yes. Well, I will just my blog post that I did this week, I actually quoted from a previous blog post about defunding the police, saying that, these protective details are going to be the last to go. Whether at a local or national level, the whole purpose of being in the inner party is to exercise power. Mm-hmm. And that power is exercised through the outer party, keeping the paroles in line. And there's always going to be room in the outer party for the protective details. I mean, Department A4 of the Gestapo was protective services, and the KGB had its close protective services directorate. So the outer party resources may get shifted around. But I can tell you right now, the inner party is going to do its damnedest to make sure that their protection is well funded. Meanwhile, actually, everybody is focusing on what happened Wednesday. But that's not the big deal. The spark that set the whole thing off. That lit the fuse for what was going on was what happened on Tuesday.
Yes, mail-in voting has proven to be an unbeatable trick for Democrats, who captured both U.S. House seats in Georgia in Tuesday's runoff election, thus making Chuck Schumer the de facto Senate Majority Leader. You know, before the election, there were 50... It was 52-48. Okay. Okay. Now that they've lost the Georgia seats, it's 50-50 with the vice president. What's her name? Harris. Yeah. I can't say that name. Karma Chameleon. Harris will be the tiebreaker. So Chuck Schumer is the de facto Senate majority leader. It happened almost exactly as I predicted in my last update on Tuesday night, because I was getting tired and had to work the next day. At 11 p.m., Republicans David Perdue and Kelly Loeffler held small but significant leads. Mm-hmm. Then the metro Atlanta counties of Fulton and DeKalb suddenly reported gigantic batches of ballots, which mm-hmm. gave Democrats the victory by narrow margins. Okay, roughly, I think there were about 4.5 million ballots cast, and John Ossoff won by about 16,000 votes, and Raphael Warnock. And I just cannot believe that Georgia would elect Raphael Warnock, but they did. By about 50,000 votes. And the thing is that people were reporting that in the wee hours, these batches of votes that came in were coming in 95% Democrat.
Yep.
And
well, not only that, but in real time, you saw 5,000 votes disappear.
Yes. Yeah.
And it was interesting, both of them dropped 5,000 votes.
Right.
At the same moment.
And the idea that it is some sort of conspiracy theory to question the integrity of this election.
Just because it's a conspiracy theory does not mean that it ain't true.
Yeah. But you're paranoid. You're a threat to our democracy.
Just because I'm paranoid
doesn't mean democracy. But they keep saying that.
I'm
very tired of that.
I know. But I mean, but just because I'm paranoid doesn't mean they're not out to get me.
All right.
Absolutely. Paranoids have enemies.
How's this playing with your neighbors? Diana.
I haven't really talked to very generally speaking, the sense of discouragement. There's a kind of a grim set to a lot of people. I have been known to say gloomily that yes, with mail-in ballots, these are not absentee. It's not who's casting the ballot, it's who's counting it. As long as we have mail-in ballots, the Democrats are going to win. I have noted with interest that there is no state in the union that has mail-in voting that the Democrats do not control. Look at Oregon.
Or Washington.
Yeah.
And because of that, I am deeply opposed to this, not just because I'm a partisan, although I am, but because in the end, if I'm disenfranchised, so's everybody else. Every fraudulent ballot negates my vote and your vote and everybody else's vote. And that is the reason that this can't go on. I really don't think my Democrat friends have really thought this through. I am perfectly willing to admit that Kelly Loeffler in particular was not a good candidate. But I didn't think she would lose to Raphael Warnock, because I would think that Warnock, despite his public persona, his history is not such that I would be comfortable with him at all.
Well,
I mean, change it around. Say that he had been the Republican candidate. His history, his life history would make me go, no, I don't think so.
Well, I think a lot of people who are essentially asleep are going to have a rude awakening over the next few years.
Well, I think the awakening has occurred. And I think,
The
well, no, I think basically what happened with the overreach that
purge.
the left had with their riots, and then the underreach that the right had with the riot at the Capitol, and the hypocrisy of the way those are being dealt with by the people who believe that they rule over us, that's just not going to play well.
Well, here's,
Well, I'm
let me throw
talking.
something out. Let me throw something out here. I read a fairly common sentiment among, let's call it, Democrat-leaning acquaintances of mine on Facebook of, oh, so suddenly cops know, have learned not to shoot protesters on Wednesday. This is coming out on Wednesday, all over the place. At pretty much the same time that Ashley Babbitt was being shot in the back, that somehow or other, oh, can you imagine if the if BLM had done something like this? Do you remember the Kavanaugh hearings?
Right. Well, that
You
was
know,
code pink.
but here's the thing: they're living in a world where, in all honesty, they actually believe somehow that peaceful protester BLM protesters were gunned down in the streets during their protests last summer, this during the summer and fall. It didn't happen. What but so this woman, there are five people dead, one of them a cop. And my question is, what do people who were saying things like, can you imagine if BLM, if people of color had been doing this, that they wouldn't have been gunned down? In what are these people actually thinking happened before and on Wednesday? What do they think happened?
Well, they're thinking that the narrative that they've been given is true because the narrative supports what they desperately want to believe.
You know, go ahead, Rob.
The thing about this, what the hell was I talking about?
Good
I
old,
just,
great memory there,
yeah,
Stacy.
I'm sorry, but the thing is that what I said about people waking up, okay. The consequences of what has happened will not it will become evident. Okay, in other words, a lot of people, I was in 1992. Let me give you a clue here. In 1992, I was a lifelong Democrat and voted for, not only voted for Bill Clinton, I had a Clinton Gore bumper sticker on my car. Okay, that's how enthusiastic I was. I actually got heat from my editor at the Rome News Tribune in Rome, Georgia. I got some heat from my boss because I had a bumper sticker on my car, and they didn't like the lack of objectivity implied by having a Clinton Gore bumper sticker on my car. But I was born to be a proud Democrat, and he had no sooner taken his hand off the Bible, okay? I mean, he took the oath of office, immediately went inside and started signing a bunch of executive orders. And when I found out what he had done, I was like, whoa, I didn't vote for that. You know, and people told me, he says, you weren't listening, you didn't realize he had promised all this crap. I said, no. I thought he was a Sam Nunn Democrat, which was what I was back in the day. I thought he was, just a good old boy of going to balance the budget, And by the way, it's been 28 years, and I still haven't gotten that middle class tax cut he promised me. Or actually, I had to wait until Bush got in office before I got my middle class tax cut. But when we see the consequences of what has happened, when it real life comes home to these people, and trust me, the economy is not going to be able to stand what Biden, Schumer, and Pelosi are going to do to it.
Oh, the late 70s Carter economy is going to look good compared to the next 4 years.
It's going to be bad. The folks, brace yourself.
What really scares me, though, is, and this is something that happened in a previous Democrat administration, they are so wedded to one particular part of their party that this is going to come down. This is not going to be Obama's third term. It's not going to be Carter's second term. It's going to be Buchanan's.
Tell me about your yesterday and today post.
And that's the whole point. When all this was going down, there was so much confusion that the only way I could blog about it was to say, look, folks, this reminds me of a quote, a famous quote by somebody I was in school with. While I was studying electrical engineering at Vanderbilt, Fred Thompson was studying law. And when I saw him during the Watergate hearings, I just went, oh, yeah, that guy. And my favorite one of his acting roles was as Admiral Painter in The Hunt for Red October. And there's this one point where he's on the deck of an aircraft carrier saying, this business will get out of control and we'll be lucky to live through it. That's exactly what's happening. This business is getting out of control.
Yeah. And see, young people, by the way, young people, and by young, I mean anyone under 40, really even anyone under 50, doesn't remember how bad it got during the 1970s. The hopelessness that affected so many people.
We'll get to that in a little while. Yeah, I've got
But 1979, or I think even of 1975, after they impeached.
Yeah. You'd have the oil shocks, but we'll get to that in a bit. But the point is you're right. The kids don't understand this stuff. Mm-hmm. You've got a post that we're going to go to. And when people take a look at that post, right next to the headline, they're going to see this yellow button. And that yellow button is important. It's one of the reasons why we're not Marxists. We are flat out capitalists.
Okay, folks, if you will go to my blog, theothermccain.com, you will notice near the top of the center column, a greedy capitalist thing, a yellow button. The yellow button has on it the word donate. If you will click the yellow button, it will take you off to my PayPal account where I haven't been banned yet. And so while you still can, click the yellow button to donate to my PayPal account to help support the blog as well as the podcast. And meanwhile,
over at Hogwash in the sidebar, there's an icon of a tip jar. And if you click on that, you'll be taken to my PayPal account. And I haven't been banned yet either. And you can donate to support Hogwash, or you can scroll down in the sidebar and click on that icon of a hat. And it will take you up to the Hogwash store where you can buy all sorts of stuff that's branded in various ways associated with the blog. Or you can, this is a way you can support more bloggers than just Stacy or me. We've got links to various Amazon shopping opportunities. And if you use one of those links, at any blogger who does as a member of the Amazon Associates Program, you can support that blogger because we'll get a small commission off the sale. You'll pay the same price, but it helps support us as well. So, regardless, you still need to remember the five most important words in the English language.
Hit the freaking tip jar.
Amen, or all women, or whatever.
Oh.
We'll get to that later.
I tell you what, these never Trumpers, man, I despise those
people. But see, the thing is, Well, look, here we are on the internet. Mm-hmm. We're having a virtual, I mean, of course, we could have been doing this on radio 50 years ago.
Yes.
But, you know, we're having this virtual interchange with our audience. And but the problem is too many people think this sort of stuff is real.
Right. I had a post yesterday at my blog, theothermccain.com, where I said real life is not Twitter or a video game. Now, I would like to thank my grandson, James, for inspiring this, because he was staying with us the other day, and he takes over the TV when he's here, you know, and he had it on some sort of YouTube channel where they play video games. You watch people play video games. I don't know what that's called, but anyways, but apparently watching other people play video games is now a form of entertainment. So my son's watching that, and I saw this thing that was, you know, kind of, you know, dangerous that was going on in this. I said, you understand that this is a video game, right? Okay. And I think the part of the problem that's going on out there is people spending too much time playing games, essentially. Well,
and not understanding the real danger that lurks in the real world.
Practically everybody on Twitter Friday was sharing their opinion of what happened Wednesday in Washington, D.C. Not only are Democrats using the mob scene at the Capitol to smear all Republicans as traitors, etc., but a lot of quote-unquote conservatives are making a point of how much they deplore the unruly rabble. Now, it's not enough for them that we refrain from bad behavior, but we are expected to ostentatiously proclaim how much we despise those who do. And see, to maintain one's status as a pundit, you must distance yourself from those deplorables over there, heaping up a pile of epithets and pejorative descriptions to make clear in no uncertain terms that you're a serious intellectual rather than part of the lumpen proletariat. Well, homie, don't play that game, see? And I will not, you know, I have always had a tremendous populist instinct. And I'm not throwing the people under the bus. The woman, the protester who was killed, Ashley Babbitt, we actually watched the video where she was shot. And I'm like, you know, if someone had asked my advice, which no one ever does, by the way, but Stacy, is it a good idea to trample down a police barricade and smash through the doors of the Capitol and wander around until you get outside the speaker's lobby, then smash the window and try to climb through? If they had asked me that question, I might have said, hey, maybe not. Okay.
Bad idea.
Yeah, that might be a bad idea. At the point where you encounter law enforcement carrying heavy weapons, okay? And, you know, and I'm laughing. It's really tragic. But
well, on
the other hand, if you look at the pictures, the Capitol policeman was using a fairly standard Glock handgun of the kind that Ted Kennedy and Chuck Schumer were trying to ban during the 80s.
Hey, wait, she was surrounded. There were cops everywhere. There was no need to shoot her.
Yeah.
Well, it's being investigated now by the U.S. Attorney's Office as a homicide, an illegal use of police force.
Well, here's the thing is that I watched that video. I watched that video and I've seen, you know, all the different clips I think I've seen them all. But the thing is, it wasn't something sudden. This was not a split second thing. That guy aimed that pistol. He had that, you know, the minute she got up in that window, he had the pistol at her. He took aim and shot to kill.
There was no need for that. That's the thing that's driving me crazy. She shouldn't have been there. She should not have been hanging from the door frame. But she... Hello? Am I?
Yeah.
Sorry.
Hello?
But she should not have been shot. She could have been... They could have pulled her down and arrested her. And she would have deserved it. She was out of line.
But... I mean, look. She's dead because she did something stupid. Okay.
No, she's dead because a cop did something bad.
Well, that too. But the cop would not have done that bad thing if she had been doing, if she had been behaving in a more responsible manner. My problem is not that these people are deplorable because they were protesting. My problem is they're deplorable because they were unwise.
Well, as I said, you know, I feel at some level responsible because, you know, after the 2012 election, I'm like, screw this. You know, I'll just stay home, babysit my grandchildren and blog about the culture because I was sick of politics. I was just sick of it.
But as Breitbart pointed out, culture is upstream from politics, and blogging about culture is important.
Right, but
here's what's going on. I suspect that you had a substantial number of deplorables who had looked at the rules that had been adopted as they've been applied to Antifa and BLM, and they decided that if those are the rules, we can play by them.
Yeah.
And the old rules required and. The old rules are the rules that I would prefer that we would operate under. But the old rules required a decent respect for public order and the common good. The new rules are about grabbing and holding on to power by any means necessary.
Well, here's something. You're right. That is exactly what the new rules appear to be. The thing is that I don't disapprove of the people who broke in and started wandering off with Pelosi's podium, et cetera, et cetera.
That guy, Florida man, by the way.
We'll get to him in a bit.
Yeah, the dog just went crazy.
Yeah.
Hi, yeah.
Hello, dogs. Well,
hello.
Yes.
Anyways, but you make the point that you cite. I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore from the
Network.
Yeah, from Network, which was the 1976, which, as you said, was a low point during the post-Watergate era.
Yeah. And you can, but if you go to Hogwash, there's a post up from a few days ago called Who Did What? And there's you can click on the YouTube link there and watch I'm Mad as Hell speech from that. And you can listen to it, and it's about people being out of work and high crime rates and that sort of stuff. And you could say, wow, that could have been made last year, not all those years ago. The left has uncorked several mixed metaphor alert here. The left has uncorked several bottles over the past 4 years, and there's some really bad genies wandering about the area now. And as a result, our betters are going to have to deal with one of the corollaries of Murphy's Laws that says, well, once you open a can of worms, the only way to recant them is to use a bigger can. Mm-hmm. And it's going to get ugly because the inner party is going to try to establish enough order to protect themselves, at least or protect themselves, not us. Meanwhile, Weasel Zippers has a picture up today of the guy walking off with Pelosi's lectern, and they note that he's been arrested and he's in custody in the Pinellas County Sheriff's Office down in Florida. So we've got a good Florida man story as well.
Oh, yeah. Pinellas County, that's Tampa.
Yeah.
I actually proposed the sheriff of Pinellas County, who's a Republican, by the way, as a presidential candidate for 2024, because I think what we've got to do, and I am predicting that crime is about to just go out of control after this summer of Antifa / BLM protests. I think we're looking at big trouble coming down the road.
Well,
and anyways, but
yeah, well, see, that your state problem state you have is just not fitting in if you're a racist.
Yeah. I got an email today from our quote unquote friends at the Southern Poverty Law Center. Now, Stacy, why are you getting email from the Southern Poverty Law Center? Well, it turns out that a few years ago, when some internet trolls, whom we will not name, decided that they would sign me up for a bunch of things, including the Southern Poverty Law Center mailing list. Now, some of you may know that I'm on other lists maintained by the SPLC.
I can't keep up with that. I mean, I just don't have the way to attract their attention you do.
But as with Joseph being sold into Egyptian slavery by his brothers, while my enemy meant this prank for evil, God meant it for good. Periodic SPLC emails provide me with an interesting glimpse into the kind of messages the left is sending out to their deranged base. You wanted to say something?
No.
John, you were going to accuse me of endorsing slavery as if it were an institution ordained by God. Oh,
no, that's
wait
the sort
a minute.
Of, no, that's the sort of stuff that Democrats used to sell.
But you see, it was part of God's purpose for his chosen people, right? That they should spend those centuries
but don't
in
you understand,
Egyptian
Stacey,
bondage.
Don't you understand, Stacey? That entitles them to be at the head of the line for reparations.
oh, wait for that, folks. Monday, never mind. I had a
Soviet joke just spring horribly to mind. Go forward. Go move forward quickly.
Okay. Well, anyways, just this morning, the SPLC sent out this screed. One of the powerful lessons we must take away from this week's coup attempt by President Trump and his supporters is that 2021 is not a time for half measures in the fight against hate and extremism. I'm going to cut short a little bit of it, but
thank you.
The racist violence that continues to threaten our country, the infrastructure of white nationalist movement, this attempted coup on our democracy comes as no surprise, since white nationalist groups have been energized by Trump since he was a presidential candidate. Weeks of planning went into this attack. Highly organized networks of white supremacist organizations. I'm just giving you the highlights here, folks.
Stacey, there's only one problem with this. I mean, it does fit the narrative.
Was there even a Confederate flag present?
There was one. I saw one in the crowd.
But I mean, here's the point, Stacey. There's only one. I mean, it does. What they're saying fits the narrative, but there's only one problem with what they're saying.
What?
It's a lie.
Yeah, and I point this out, and it's utterly counterfactual. Okay, they write about this network of white supremacist organizations and the weeks of planning, and I'm watching what happened because I happen to know some of the people who were involved in organizing the rally.
There are close personal friends, some of them.
And fellow co-defendants. But but there were over 200,000 Trump supporters in D.C. last week for the Stop the Steal rally. And I don't know how many people breached the Capitol. It looked like less than 2,000. In other words, 1% of the total pro-Trump crowd was involved in that incident at the Capitol. And
most of those stayed behind the velvet ropes. Most of those
people did. I'm watching those videos, and it looks like it was an impulsive thing that happened, a spontaneous thing that happened. If there was planning in it, we will find out. Go ahead.
Yeah, but I mean, the whole point is that, but you see, the narrative lie is that Trump incited that.
Yeah.
And it's just not true. I watched the speech twice, and there's nothing remotely like incitement in it.
Yes, I have got another post up that went up today. I've been unusually busy for a Saturday. No, Trump did not incite violence. And I cite two law professors, Ann Halthouse of the University of Wisconsin and Glenn Reynolds of the University of Tennessee, about the fact that this is just, it wasn't in incitement, certainly not in the legal terms of the words. And by the way, one of the things conservatives need to get in the habit of doing is just occasionally switch over and watch CNN, watch MSNBC. You may only be able to handle it for a half hour. I mean, sometimes I have been able to stand having CNN on all day. I've actually watched entire days of MSNBC.
Well, we actually watched MSNBC as our primary feed when we did the election night. They were even better than CNN or Fox on actually having
the results. Well, anyways, they have been saying over and over and over. It just every hour repeated that anyone who questions the integrity of the election, any doubt about the reality of Biden's victory, is a conspiracy theory. There's no evidence of any kind of cheating anywhere. They repeatedly say. And that anyone trying to stop the steal, which was the hashtag, as you know, that anyone trying to prevent this it's a threat to our democracy. It's a threat to our democracy. It's a coup. President Trump is going to engineer a coup. And so when these, you know, a comparative handful of Trump supporters, and I realize they look very numerous. If you didn't look too closely and realize and start counting heads, their numbers were in the hundreds or perhaps as much as 2,000. But remember, there were 200,000, and it was spontaneous. But the claim is that this something that Trump said inspired this. But well, nothing.
Well, but I mean, yeah, I mean, he said, go up there and peacefully engage with the Congress.
That was killed, Ashley Babbitt. Ashley Babbitt. And I did a little bit of research. She was a QAnon support, you know, into that QAnon conspiracy theory. Which, by the way, is mainly a lot of women buy into that QAnon stuff.
A lot of people do.
Women
tend. I will say that I know more women who are fascinated by it.
Yes.
Than I know men, but I do know men who are utterly fascinated by it.
And so this idea that satanic pedophiles are in control of the levers of power, and that the reason that they supposedly were anti-Trump is because Trump was going to expose them. And every time, you know, the death of Epstein, you know, that keeps coming up, you know, But anyways, this, you know, she was into that. And, but the other thing is that she was a military veteran, and she was patriotic. She's a very patriotic person. And that pro-America message of Trump really got to her. And so people get fired up. And I've written on the blog about, I have spent the weeks since the election trying not to go crazy. Okay. Mm-hmm. I mean, actively trying. And sometimes I just put politics out of my mind and think about fireworks or you know, because that's my hobby is mm-hmm. every year. John's been there. I put on my family and I put on a gigantic fireworks show on the 4th of July. But if you don't find some way to tune out the politics, it will drive you crazy.
Well, but the thing is, the whole thing has to do with what the narrative is. And look at the purge that's been going on Twitter.
Oh, yeah, and elsewhere.
Well, Twitter, I tweeted today in response to somebody asking about what was going on. Twitter told me when I joined that it was a free speech platform. And it was for the first few years I was on, but Conquest's second law took over. And when mm-hmm. the left can't win based on the facts, it always reverts to censorship. The promise of a free speech platform was a lie.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And you notice I've used the word lie a lot, because there's a difference between being mistaken in your understanding of the facts and knowing the facts and misrepresenting them. Mm-hmm. Okay. The promise of a free speech platform was a lie.
Yes.
Well, I think it was not originally a lie.
No, I believe it always was. But that's my personal belief.
With Admiral Akbar in believing that we have been lured into a trap.
No, I don't believe that we were lured into a trap. I believe that they didn't think that conservatives would use it the way we did.
Well,
but that's okay. Look, we are where we are now. We're in a situation where Congress has its first day of its session, and a Democratic representative who's allegedly a United Methodist minister leads a prayer and ends it with a woman. Now, I'm so old that I was taught to conclude my prayers with the word amen. The English word amen can be an adverb. It can be an interjection. It can be a verb. And those parts of speech are genderless in mm-hmm. English. And it can also be a synonym for truth, which makes it a noun. But that noun is gender is neuter. Mm-hmm. So, you know, grammar is hard. And one of the things that means that we're going to have confused speech listening to the narrative is the fact that if they can't use the rules of grammar, or at least as they existed, we're going to have new speak.
If you destroy the meaning of language, you destroy communication and you destroy truth. Look, I keep saying, everybody says this, but I believe it. 1984 is not an instruction manual, but there are people out there who want it to be.
Go ahead.
Yes, I have no intention of becoming sane.
You know something, I'm not sure that we're living in 1984. I think it's Animal Farm.
Yeah. Well, the thing
that, you know, no, and I'm starting to feel like an old horse.
Yeah. Well, you know, the thing is,
Comrade Roykov, I understand. There are days when I truly understand.
With my name, I should be one of the pigs. Go ahead, Stacy. I know you're
Snowball?
Frustrated.
Oh, Hogue. Oh, I would probably.
You're
making a joke there. Yeah.
Yes, I would probably wind up being Snowball.
But anyway, the thing about the SJWs took over, okay, is that if you go back and you look at the history of Twitter, Okay, what happened was, and this was, I think Twitter started in 2007, but anyways, in late 2008, a group of people using the hashtag TCOT, Top Conservatives on Twitter, including our friend Melissa McKenzie was one of them, began using Twitter effectively, and this was just about the time Sarah Palin, right? Sarah Palin was chosen as John McCain's running mate, and there was a sudden upsurge of conservative grassroots energy, which spilled over in 2009 into the Tea Party movement. And so everyone got on Twitter. And it was very effective, in mobilizing energy for the Tea Party movement in 2010. And then in 2011, you had the hashtag Occupy movement come along. And that was where the left began using Twitter more effectively. I don't know how effectively, but one of the things that happened is that in Obama's second term, right? Think about this: 2014. Some guys in the video game industry noticed that so-called social justice warriors, SJWs, were trying to take over the video game industry with their boutique cultural Marxist concerns about gender and race and everything else. And they were like, no, this is about playing games. You can't come in here with that crap. And that is where hashtag Gamergate started. Well, it was as a consequence of Gamergate that I got banned from Twitter.
Yeah, well, I got banned from Twitter by writing truthful stuff about a convicted felon. So, and then when it turned out that they did it in a way that left them open, perhaps for a defamation suit, I suddenly had my account restored. Yes. But anyway, this whole thing, leaves me confused, because if you're going to end a prayer with all women, and by the way, every time I try to type that into my blog, autocorrupt fights with me. But the Democrats have also imposed a new set of rules on the House of Representatives that eliminates the use of such gendered terms as mother or father or brother or sister or aunt or uncle. So there's for celebrating the biological differences between the sexes, and at the same time, they're trying to eliminate all the differences between the sexes because they're socially constructed. So, this is what I mean about the confusion with language and newspeak. Or maybe they're going to end the prayers with a tranny. I don't know. It's going to be. But you see, none of this fits inside of the facts. None of this fits with history, right?
No.
And so you've got, all sorts. I mean, they even have to change the history of what happened when Europeans came to this continent.
Yes, I had a post this week that was very popular, as a matter of fact. It was on Tuesday. It was called Stolen Land and Fake Numbers, How SJWs Invented a Genocide Myth. And I would urge you to find it on the blog, because I make reference to a 1998 book by University of Wisconsin historian David Hennigy. It was Numbers from Nowhere, the American Indian Contact Population Debate. What happened? For years, the prevailing historians had said that the North American continent, the continental United States, at the time of the arrival of of Western men
Europeans.
Here, Europeans arrival here, that there were about 1 million people on this continent. Now, we now have 325 million people on this continent.
Well, no, we've got 330 million just in the U.S. There's another,
right?
There's another 75 or 100 million in Mexico and another 30 million in Canada.
But
so
the
there's
point
a half a
being,
billion people.
The point being that is that this continent was sparsely populated.
It still is.
Mm-hmm. Well, but my point, and if you would stop quibbling, sir, my point is that by comparison to Europe, this space was relatively vacant. There were a few, relatively few, villages in the vicinity of where the pilgrims first landed, but there was nothing like what they would recognize as a town or a city.
Yeah, well, in Mexico was the densely populated area, and it might have had 500,000 to 1 million people.
Well, don't forget the various the Mississippi chiefdoms or the other mound civilizations, some of which are sort of related, some of them sort of not.
By the way, Diana, if you can get a hold of a copy of Past Times, which was published by the Rome News Tribune back when I worked there, because uh-huh. I was the editor or the assistant editor on that project. You will find me. This was where I talked to anthropologists, the most mm-hmm. renowned anthropologists. Of the Southeast, including Hudson, among them. And what they believe, by the way, is that about 50 years before De Soto arrived, and Hernando De Soto, before he arrived in the Southeast, there was a sort of a die-off, which may have been the result of pandemic disease communicated from the Spanish effing around down in the Caribbean. In other words, the theory is that a few infected Indians from the Caribbean made it up to Florida and thereby spread it throughout the Southeast, and that this was why the mound builders, right? Okay, if you've been to Etowah, and there's several in Tennessee.
I've been involved in archaeological excavations in Middle Tennessee.
Right. That all kinds of, but these, the reason that these mounds, by the time that De Soto's people got there, okay, and they said, who built these mounds? The people living there didn't even know, okay? Mm-hmm. Is that they couldn't tell them.
No, that was the second great die-off. There had been another one around 900 to 1,000.
Right, okay, right. So that the point being that even De Soto with a few hundred men, about 450 really, was able to destroy, really devastate the Kusa, the kingdom of Kusa, as it was known at the time. And they had war dogs, the Spanish did. Mm-hmm. Okay. And if you study this, these were giant canary mastiffs is what they were called. Some of the biggest dogs in the world. And they were trained to disembowel their human prey. Okay. And one of the points I make in this, if you think the English speaking settlement of what is now the United States was some sort of brutal genocide, why don't you ask what the Spaniards did in Latin America? Because the Spaniards, the Catholic Spaniards, were infinitely more brutal than the Protestant English. Okay. Now, this was taught to me as a child, that the cultural difference, what makes the difference between Mexico and the United States? Or why is Canada, for example, you know, more peaceful than Mexico, right? We've got two neighbors, right? North and south. Why do we generally get along better with Canada than we do with Mexico? And it has to do with the fact that we share the Anglo-American tradition, the English common law tradition. Okay, it was a Protestant settlement of the United States under English common law. The Spaniards, you know, remember, okay, at the time,
Stacy, you're messing with the narrative.
Yes, and I know, and it makes me so angry, is that at the time that the Spaniards were brutally enslaving Latin America, all over the Caribbean, everywhere, at that very time, the English were fighting the Spanish, okay? Have you never heard of the Spanish Armada?
Stacy, okay? You are crazy.
Yes, I am.
And you know what?
Crazy people are dangerous.
Well, but it's not easy to become sane, as Brian once told Winston Smith, and you know.
This is one of your favorite quotes.
Yes. Oh, it's not easy to become sane. That you know, mm-hmm. that everybody remembers all sorts of other quotes from 1984. But that's
a good one. I said it earlier. I refuse to become sane.
Yeah. On the other hand, crazy people are dangerous, and we had
a
Florida man accused of setting his own truck on fire this year.
To give deputies something to do.
Yeah, I mean, can you believe it?
What?
Yes. This happened in Okaloosa County, Florida. A Florida man set his own truck up in flames because he wanted to give deputies something to do, according to Okaloosa County Sheriff's Office. Deputies said they received reports of loud explosion on Mare Creek Road. But you'll have to read about that later, because I can tell by the music that it's time for me to wrap this up. I have ranted too long.
Yes, you have. But we enjoyed every second of it.
All right, folks, we will be back next Saturday night, 7 o'clock, for our usual broadcast. We are assuming that somehow they don't find a way to ban us yet.
Well, I don't think they will.
Are we going to get banned?
I know.
And look, they banned Trump from everything. There's nothing on the internet that Trump can use, apparently. He's so dangerous.
They've even got his email.
Yeah, they've got everything. So, folks, stay safe, and we will see you next Saturday night. Thanks for joining us, Diana.
Anytime.
All right.
Good night, everybody.
We are out of here.
Good night, everybody.
Well, now they call me the breeze. I keep going down the road. Well, now they call me the breeze. I keep going down the road. I ain't got me nobody. I don't care if people know. Mr. Breeze.